Hello, it's Tuesday, April 18th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. We're pleased to have on today Professor Jim Fetzer, who's one of the co-founding members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which has really given the 9/11 Truth movement a shot in the arm over the past few months. He's also the author of numerous books on the JFK assassination and also the murder of Paul Wellstone. And what we're going to talk about today is, first of all, the Zacharias Moussaoui trial, and then also the petition that's been going around that they have right now over three-quarters of the necessary signatures on this to where they can then take it to every member of the U.S. House of Representatives and also the senators. And also, before we bring Jim on, though, I want to say that we want to commend him for the way he's handled himself in the last month or so. He's been the subject of some unfair criticism in regard to the murder of Michael Zabor and also some very heavy-handed hoaxers who are just really coming down on him, and he's handled all of this very professionally.
Plus, he's done an enormous amount of traveling over the last several weeks, giving speeches and presentations, and we really commend you, Jim, for everything you're doing to get the word out.
Right, so we'd like to welcome Mr. Jim Fetzer to Wing TV. How you doing, Jim?
Just fine, and all except all those kind words.
Yeah. Well, Jim, we hear every day on the news an update. This is the mainstream news, an update on the Moussaoui trial and these tapes that are being played. And it seems like a lot of hogwash is being fed to the American public. And, of course, there's another side to the story. So why don't you jump in there and give us an update about what's really going on with his trial, and then we'll throw a few questions your way, too, about that.
Absolutely. Well, you got to ask yourself what's really going on here. I mean, Michael Ivey, who is the producer of a soon-to-be-released film called 9/11 Mysteries, has summarized it very well when he suggests in 3 points, a crazed, hate-spouting Muslim fanatic tells the jury exactly what the government wants to hear, that he was part of Osama bin Laden's 9/11 plot, he was proud of it, he'd kill Americans anywhere, every time he could. You know, when they say, would you do the same thing tomorrow, he says, today. Second, there's a chance to play a tape, allegedly from Flight 93's cockpit voice recorder, before an audience. I mean, they're claiming that it was a public display, but it was only being played in this very tightly controlled courtroom, and there are very interesting questions that are arise about its authenticity. And then, of course, third, we have this parade of 9/11 family members reliving their pain. You get Mayor Giuliani, you get others going on and on and on about how awful, how excruciating it is, leading one commentator to describe it as pain washing, which is the reiteration, you know, a painful experience over and over again until you no longer have the emotional resistance to challenge it as to whether it's even true or not. I think that's much of what is going on here. There are, many, many problems with this trial that I look forward to our discussing today.
Well, let's touch upon that point you made, that we keep seeing and hearing in the mainstream media that these tapes are finally being played in public. But as you pointed out, they're not being played in public. They're being played in a very tightly controlled courtroom, and the only people bringing this information out is people like Pete Williams from MSNBC.
Well, let me add to that, too, Jim. What I'm hearing is that they're having to use subtitles, and the tape itself is pretty garbled, so are people really even hearing anything?
Oh, that's great, Lisa. No, other commentators have observed that this is a very strange use of a tape. Jim Condit Jr., for example, director of Citizens for a Fair Vote Count, has observed that if the government were to release the tape, it could be subjected to critical scrutiny. He's pointed out the pilot's voice doesn't even appear on it,
right,
which might, of course, be identifiable by the pilot's family, and that most of it is pretty vague and pretty garbled. But we have some even better stuff than that. Alan Green, who I hope will become a member, has observed that much of the information on the tape is from the passenger cabin, because the cockpit door, you'll remember, was closed before it was broken using the drink cart. Mm-hmm. Remember, we got all that in there, how they, you know, they're talking about we're gonna rush it and boom, boom, boom.
Right.
All that. And the point he makes is this: how is it possible for the voices of those in the passenger cabin to have been heard on the cockpit voice recorder, much less through a closed door?
Right. And also, tell us about that there's this technology now where you can have voice transformation, voice recombination, and so forth, where you can take just snippets of a person's voice and make actual whole conversations just from these little snippets.
Oh, that's absolutely right, Victor, that the use of these voice synthesizers, which have been around, I don't know, some 10 years or so, can be made to create a completely authentic sounding phony voice, which may very well have been done in this case. But here's another fascinating point. You know, at the end, you hear the hijackers saying, this is just before it shuts off, the last words, all is great, all is great, all is great.
In English.
Or in Arabic, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. But we have a member of the society, Mohammed Colombo, who is a Muslim and who has written to me and stated with no hesitation that the last words of a Muslim cannot be those words, that those are words that are used in prayer calls or in war attack situations, but never before a person dies, when a Muslim must instead affirm the most basic belief of the religion, namely that there is but one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet.
Very interesting. Yeah. Well, here's another thing is, and we brought this up in our Phantom Flight 93 book, there's a woman named Lisa Jefferson who is a GTE operator in Oak Brook, Illinois, and she was the woman who received the phone call, this infamous phone call from Todd Beamer, and they were supposedly on the line for 13 minutes. She recently appeared on Larry King. And the big thing is when this call was made, everybody already knew that World Trade Centers number 1 and 2 had been struck by airliners. You think, Jim, that a GTE operator, when they're hearing from someone on Flight 93 that was hijacked, don't you think she'd hit the record button and record the conversation, but they haven't released any tape from this? How can that be?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Victor. That's an excellent point. And to claim to have been on 13 minutes, I mean, that's preposterous. At the altitudes and the speeds they were flying, it's impossible to maintain contact with the microwave relay towers, which means this is a phony report from a phony source. This can't possibly be correct. We've had A.W. Gladney has been flying around the country when trying to make cell phone contact even today with more sophisticated connections and so forth, and above a couple of thousand feet and at very low speeds, just to take off and landing are the only times when he's able to make connections. Otherwise, they can't be done. So this whole thing is a charade.
Jim, I was I got an email this morning from a 9/11 writer, and he said that Todd Beamer's father, David Beamer, appeared on the Today Show this morning promoting this new Flight 93 movie, and he said this guy was so fishy, he was spouting pure propaganda, party line propaganda, saying how huge of a threat the terrorists still are.
Well, there are a lot of shallow people who have very base motives. I mean, this guy no doubt stands to make a good chunk of change off of this film. I mean, I wouldn't.
Well, you know what we found?
I would suspect his motives, and of course his conduct is suspicious right on its face, as you describe it.
Well, we found a connection between David Beamer and the Pentagon Reconstruction Project when he was CEO of Legato Systems.
Really?
So, yeah, and we've addressed that in our Flight 93 book.
Yeah, there's some definite ties between the Beamers and this whole neocon war machine that are very intriguing. But I want to bring up another point. There was a reporter, Peter Williams from MSNBC, and he was being interviewed by a man named Dan Abrams. And Williams let it slip that Zacharias Moussaoui is actually outfitted with a stun belt beneath his jumpsuit during his testimony. What do you think that means? And could it mean that when if he's giving the wrong answer or something, there's a little shock remind him?
It's rather Pavlovian, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think just a little shock. 50,000 volts is a really powerful inducement to conform to the script, and there are all kinds of indications that this is a scripted trial. Let me point out, first and foremost, that what he confessed to was not what he's being punished for. In other words, the government has effected a little shell game here. What he confessed to was a plot to attack the White House in order to release this sheik, who has been, you know, incarcerated for terrorist acts in the past. So he said it was a Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman that he said he was involved in. He never said he was involved in 9/11. In fact, he actually denied it. And
right.
Yet now, of course, during the trial, all the government is assuming and he's now confessing to having been involved in 9/11, which, of course, is completely ridiculous. Now, the government is so intent on manipulating the jury that its attorneys have contaminated witnesses, elicited testimony it can't corroborate, and according to multiple reports, even forced him to wear this stun belt you're describing. I mean, this is a cruel joke.
Right. Yeah. Now, there's some other testimony that came out. Defense attorney Edward McMahon, when he was cross-examining an FBI agent named Fitzgerald, he admitted, Fitzgerald did, that there was no evidence whatsoever of any contact between Moussaoui and the supposed hijackers. No evidence whatsoever. Plus, if you go back to April 19th of 2002, FBI Director Robert Mueller was giving a speech, and he said after 7 months of investigation, there was no evidence to tie the accused Muslim hijackers to the terror attacks of 9/11.
Or the other 19 hijackers.
What are we to make of that?
Well, look what's going on here. This is also very clever. They get him back last April to confess to a crime, and then they wait nearly a year before they have this penalty phase, and then they treat it as though he's confessed to a different crime, the 9/11 crime, when he actually was confessing to a plot with a completely different character and they had denied he was involved in 9/11. They use his uncorroborated testimony as though it were evidence. There's no opportunity for cross-examine here, really. You have the absurdity of the defense attorneys trying to impeach their own witness and the government seeking to, you know, support the witness, because it's only through the witness's own uncorroborated testimony that the government is able to make its case. And we know, of course, on independent grounds that the government's case is fraudulent to begin with, because these guys did not commit the crime.
Right.
Unless they implanted that thermite or sulfur-enhanced thermite in the buildings in Twin Tower 1 or 2, or at least unless they were responsible for bringing down World Trade Center 7. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous to think that these guys were responsible. They are not even the guilty parties.
Yeah.
Which makes the whole thing a complete ridiculous show trial in the worst possible sense. This brings back visions of the Soviet Union in Stalin's day.
Yeah, how valid is forced testimony anyway, through torture?
Yeah. I know, that's another absurdity. So we have people abroad, you know, and we're torturing. It's well known that persons under torture are going to give testimony that conforms to the expectations of those who are torturing them,
right,
which is why it's a highly unreliable, and of course it shouldn't be used anyway on the grounds of human rights in treating persons with dignity, but of course that's not something our government seems to care about.
Right.
Boot.
Yeah, one last thing about the tapes, Jim, is on April 12th, MSNBC, on one of their reports, was playing this mumbled audio and saying that this was the dialogue between the supposed hijackers and the passengers on the flight. But what they didn't tell people was that this was actually a reenactment of what was on the tape. So they're manipulating this whole scenario.
Reconstructing dialogue.
Yeah, reconstructing it, but playing it as if it's the actual tape itself.
Well, that's very observant of you to pick up on that. I mean, how shameless can you get, you know? I mean, they appear to be fabricating the original tape anyway, and here you get a fabrication of a fabrication.
Yeah.
This is quite ironic.
Exactly.
There was a hoax in Cardiff, New York, where a guy had a phony fossilized giant buried in his backyard, and it was later the case that P.T. Barnum wanted to buy the thing, but he wouldn't sell it to him, so Barnum made his own fake of the fake. And now down in Baraboo, there's a circus museum there where you can go and see another model that was based on Barnum's model, so you have a fake of a fake of a fake. And
third
what
generation.
You're talking about in this case is a very similar arrangement.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Well, Jim, before we get to the petition, as this whole Moussaoui trial comes to an end, what do you think the conclusion is going to be?
It's foregone, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what do you think the final result is going to be?
Well, I think the whole idea is supposed to be, you know, for propagandistic purposes, pain washing. We're supposed to be so overwhelmed with pain and grief and suffering that we don't even question the truth of the matter. And frankly, I believe this whole matter has been stretched out over this long period of time precisely because we have been making the kinds of advances in the 9/11 truth movement that you were describing at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Right.
So I think actually it's no coincidence that the trial is taking place. And of course, as you well know, since you were there with me at the time when Phil Berg, former Deputy Attorney General for the state of Pennsylvania, and Colonel George Nelson, U.S. Air Force retired, and I appeared in front of that courthouse with a press conference on the of evidence that showed that what was going on here was a complete and utter sham, that the wrong people were on trial and that the right people were across the Potomac, not
That's
so
right.
very far away. I'd just like to point out some more evidence, by the way, that indicates this whole thing is scripted. I mean, this is a Hollywood-style production with special effects and props. Consider this. Massaoui has been using certain phrases and expressions such as "make my day" that are familiar to us all from Clint Eastwood movies. Well, do you think an Islamic fundamentalist is going to spend his time sitting around watching Dirty Harry? He's even offered his own rendition of Bruce Springsteen's song, you know, "Born in the USA." In other words, from Massaoui, it's "Burn in the yep. USA." He's describing his trial as a cyber lynching. Do you think this guy would come up with this kind of stuff on his own?
Oh,
I think it's preposterous.
No.
I mean, the American people are being played for fools, yep. for saps, by the American government, which has to know better. For example, you know, one of the key points that refutes the government's claims is that 5, 6, or 7 of these guys have turned up alive and well and living in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Not to mention that they couldn't have flown the planes or that those cell phone calls are impossible. Do you think the government doesn't know that? I mean, this is the very first point that David Ray Griffin makes in his book, the 9/11
right.
Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Do you think the American government, these attorneys, haven't read David Ray Griffin's book and haven't stumbled across the very first point he makes?
No, because they have the book. But, you know, what I found interesting, too, is now all of their alleged evidence on their evidence page has been brought forth at this trial, but not to the public. And things like a red bandana, when we know Muslim men don't wear the color red. You know, stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean, it's just absurd, this alleged evidence they're bringing forth, pictures and whatnot. But let's get to the petition.
Let me make just one final point, and then
sure.
we'll go to the petition. My final point is this. He's allegedly confronting life, his loss of his life, because he didn't bring forth information that if he had brought it forth, information about these attacks, that the government would have taken actions and prevented the loss of life. That's what he's on trial for. And yet we have had, during this trial, testimony from an FBI agent named Harry Sammet, who said he sent 70 warnings
yep.
to his superiors about his suspicions that Massaoui was planning a terrorist attack using a plane to hit the World Trade Tower, and they were all ignored. Now, my point is, okay, 6 or 7 times, maybe that's some kind of neglect or mismanagement or mistakes, but you get up to 20 or 30 times, and you're getting into the area of criminal neglect.
Right.
And when you talk about 70, this has to be a matter of deliberate policy on the part of the government,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
which, of course, as David Ray Griffin has suggested, the Bush administration didn't want the plan exposed in advance because they wanted to use it to conceal their own designs.
Plus, Jim, at that press conference down there in Alexandria, I believe it was Phil Berg who said, if Musawi's on trial here and his life is at stake, then shouldn't the real criminals like Dick Cheney and everybody else who was behind it, shouldn't they be on trial with the same exact charges
yeah.
being leveled against them?
And all the FBI people who got the warnings and ignored them.
Absolutely. I mean, and the difference is we can prove that Cheney was complicit. They cannot prove that Massaoui was complicit. I mean, our whole point about the testimony of Norman Mineta in the underground bunker clearly implicates Cheney directly in the attack on the Pentagon. That's inescapable. It's powerful. It's direct testimony. They have nothing of that kind in the case of Massaoui. The whole thing is fabricated, fake. The trial is a sham and a charade.
Right. Okay, now let's get to the petition. You can go to scholarsfor911truth.org. Currently, this petition has made a lot of progress. It stands at 7,621. I just checked it before the show. We are seeking 10,000 names at least on this petition.
So they're over three-quarters of the way there.
And I guess it is to petition the Department of Defense to release all of the pertinent and relevant documents, videotapes, and other evidence regarding debris and whatnot from the purported crash sites of 9/11. And we'd like to just quickly go through these points.
Absolutely.
The first one you're asking here is for the immediate release of the full Pentagon surveillance tapes. Now, they've only released 5 frames, which appear to be doctored, and yet they're suppressing other evidence like videotapes, correct?
Yes, that's right. What's so curious about this, Lisa, is a fellow came through Duluth here a couple of weeks ago and showed me a much larger set of frames from in front of the Pentagon, about 44 frames that he said were in a National Geographic documentary. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating as I studied these frames is they showed that the fire was not, and the smoke was not coming from inside the building, but from outside the building, that there was a row of dumpsters there, and all this massive fire was burning upward with these billowing black clouds right out of the dumpsters. I mean, it's just, again, another instance of the Hollywood props, special effects. You know, Donald Rumsfeld doesn't want his nice building damaged, so, you know, he wants to arrange that you have minimal impact, minimal death, and maximal impression of smoke from the distant Capitol where everyone was rushing out, where I think the whole thing was intended to be a psychological trauma on the representatives and the senators.
Yeah, plus, Jim, I think that smoke was used there to obfuscate the face of the Pentagon, because for the first 33 minutes or so,
Obscure.
The face of the Pentagon for the first 33 minutes before the facade fell, because if anyone would have seen the front of the Pentagon, they would have seen that there was no Flight 77 there. There was very little damage except for a 16-foot hole. So they had to create this smoke just to cloud the face of the building.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, there's no indication that 757 hit that building. There's no fuselage debris, no wings, no seats, no luggage, no bodies, no tail, not even the engines, which are practically indestructible. You have a very tiny hit point. You've got unbroken windows in the immediate vicinity. That's a limestone facade. It doesn't show the imprint from a large aircraft, which would be an inevitable effect had it actually been there, not to mention the absence of a massive crater or a torn-up lawn if such a thing had happened under one scenario or another. It simply didn't take place. No Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon.
Right. Okay, point number two in your petition is NIST has 6,899 photographs and 6,977 segments of video footage from WTC-7 that haven't been released, which you say is long overdue. What would we see?
Well, what you'd see is a nice, beautiful, symmetrical, free-fall collapse of a building into its own footprint that exhibited all the signs of a classic controlled demolition. There's a huge difference between 7 and 1 and 2 in the sense that 1 and 2 are exploding from the top down. 7 is a classic case of controlled demolition.
Uh-huh.
And I'm rather confident, you know, it was for the psychological reasons trying to attribute it to the aircraft and those little fires that they had the 1 and 2 collapse from the top down, which required massive amounts of explosive force, which Steve Jones has calculated involved the use of this powerful explosive thermate, probably in a nano-enhanced version.
Right. Point number three deals with Secretary of Transportation Norm Mineta's testimony before the 9/11 Commission, in which he describes Vice President Dick Cheney castigating an officer in an underground White House bunker who asked him the question, "Do the orders still stand?" Who is this officer?
Well, he appears to have been a young aide. Now, I don't know his name, but it would be worthwhile to get his testimony on the record and under oath, which, of course, neither the president nor the vice president have ever provided any testimony under oath about these matters.
Mm-hmm.
But the obvious source of his anxiety is that the order had to be not to shoot the plane down. If you're shooting the plane down, that would be the obvious thing to do, although you're going to lose the passengers in the plane. You're not going to also lose all the civilians or military personnel at the target location. So if the choice is between losing the passengers plus all those at the target location versus just losing the passengers, obviously you shoot it down. The Pentagon has to be the best defended building in the world. If the order was to shoot it down, it would have been shot down. It wasn't. The order was to hold fire.
Exactly. Point number four. Anybody who's studied 9/11 has heard about Vice President Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force. Why haven't these reports been made public?
Well, I think the answer is a little too obvious in retrospect, namely that this was the occasion for ratifying the foreign policy of the United States that was intended to advance the interests and objectives of the major oil and gas companies. And, of course, in implementing it, we wind up going to war in Afghanistan not to bring democracy or even ultimately to discover or capture Osama bin Laden, but to build a massive pipeline across northern Afghanistan, which is now supported by two huge bases. We find in Iraq where we have to be pumping massive quantities of oil off the meter out of Iraqi oil fields, not to mention three or four major bases in Iraq, which are indicative of the fact that there was no exit plan from this administration because it had no plan to exit. I'm afraid that it's like the CIA when you have covert decisions about American foreign policy that are
Right.
This is completely undemocratic, anti-American, and these kinds of concealment of crucial information about actions taken by the American nation in the name of all of the American people must not be withheld from the American people. This is an atrocity.
That's right. Point number 5 in the petition calls for an explanation for the destruction of evidence involving audio tapes of interviews with air traffic controllers on duty on 9/11. What happened to those tapes, Jim?
Well, these recordings, which were, you know, fresh recollections of a whole bunch of air traffic controllers, were cut into tiny pieces and distributed in a whole bunch of different locations so they couldn't be reconstructed. I mean, obviously, this had to be extraordinarily damning evidence that contradicted the government's account. There is no other reasonable explanation.
Yeah. Well, when the 9/11 attacks were taking place, this is point number 6, George Bush was in a schoolroom down in Florida, and the Secret Service breached their standard security procedures for 25 minutes by allowing him to sit in that classroom. Why haven't any of these Secret Service agents been forced to testify in a court of law?
Of course, it's one of the very peculiar aspects of Bush's presence down in Sarasota, where I used to reside and teach at a small college. I mean, if there actually it actually were the case that they had reason to believe the United States actually was under attack rather than that these were feigned attacks orchestrated by the government itself, they would have whisked him out of that office so fast it would have made your head spin, secreted him off to a secret location, blah, blah, blah. None of that was done. The plane was last seen on the tarmac where it would be a conspicuous target. Karl Rove, of course, would invent the rumor that the terrorists were after Air Force One, but it was all complete and utter nonsense, just typical of his policy of creating his own reality, which really means lie, lie, lie.
That's right. We do want to know why that dog didn't bark. Point number 7 involves the war games, terror drills, and these interesting false radar blips inserted onto air traffic controller screens that were subsequently purged.
Well, a number of commentators have observed that if only standard operating procedure had been followed on 9/11, these attacks on these targets would never have been possible. NORAD and FAA would have responded promptly. As in the case of Payne Stewart's plane, when it lost communication within 15 or 20 minutes, fighter jets were there checking it out and discovered they'd lost pressurization and all the passengers were unconscious and probably already dead. I mean, in this case, obviously it was a subterfuge to confuse everyone, and fighter units were set off on wild goose chases as part of presumptive drills, and all of this appears to have been coordinated by the vice president from that underground bunker where he was observed by Secretary Mineta.
Point number 8, there are very significant reports that 3 or 4 of the black boxes from the 2 airplanes that hit the Twin Towers have been discovered, located, but the government denies that they've ever been found. Where do we stand on that?
Well, I think it's very clear that from first responders' testimony that 3 of these black boxes were recovered.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also obvious that what they contained would be so contradictory of the government's official account that that they can't allow this kind of evidence to be exposed. In fact, it's true of every item on this list involves evidence that if the government were to reveal, it would further corroborate the case against the government's own official, and let me remind everyone of this, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
I mean, the government itself has a theory that these 19 Islamic fundamentalists hijacked these 4 planes under control of a man in a cave off in Afghanistan. Obviously a conspiracy. When you confront it with the evidence, however, it appears to be the least adequate account of what actually happened on 9/11 of all of those that we have ever considered.
Jim, I just want to tell you, too, Sergeant Matthew Tartaglia of U.S. Search and Rescue, who worked at the pit on 9/11,
yeah,
told me on the phone that a couple of pieces were found by firefighters of Flight 175, what was believed to be 175, part of the wheel hub and a piece of the tail section. They were loaded onto trucks going to Freshkills, and when he went to Freshkills landfill later on, they were not there.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the government, it's like in the JFK case, if you can control the evidence, and in that case, most importantly, the body, you can pretty much determine, you know, exactly what the outcome will be. And in this case, the government learned a lot of lessons from the assassination of Jack Kennedy, and they've been controlling the evidence and dismantling the evidence, sending it off to China for recycling in the case of the steel,
mm-hmm,
and fabricating evidence if the, you know, our analysis of this tape introduced in the Massawi trial, I think, is conclusive that they have fabricated fabricated, that whole scene.
Yeah.
It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all very clever. They have a script and they're using special effects.
Okay, number nine deals with the stock market put options. What do we know about that?
Well, you know, that's fantastic. The put options, of course, are stock market wagers that a stock is going to fall.
Right.
And there were wagers on United and American Airlines and Dean Witter, a stock market firm that had 20 floors in the World Trade Center. A lot of this money was never collected, but what's crucial about it is that the Securities and Exchange Commission has very exact, detailed information about precisely who was maintaining those stock options and who had made those stock purchases, so that it would be very easy to reveal this information if one were serious about it. I mean, it's just significant that the government really has no interest in the truth, that this has not been, you know, relentlessly investigated, because it would be very telling of as an indication of persons who had advanced knowledge of what was going to take place.
And you know what? We're all assuming that this money hasn't been collected, but it would be just as easy for whoever made those stock bets to have collected it, and the public just doesn't know about it.
Well, that's an interesting suggestion, Lisa. You might be right.
Yeah. Okay, point number 10. Tell us about this large sample of slag that came from the World Trade Center towers. It's supposedly being held at Hangar 17 of the JFK International Airport in New York City. Why can't physicists inspect this sample?
Well, that's a great question. You know, why can't we inspect the tape from Flight 93? I mean, all this evidence just reeks of contradictory indications in relation to the government's official account. I'm sure it's going to be, you know, the sort of thing that would be perfectly compatible with a thermite explosion and perfectly inconsistent with the kind of pancake collapse that's supposed to be due to the weakening of the steel that the government would have us believe, which, of course, is utter nonsense. I mean, as I've observed on more than one occasion, the only problem with the government's account is it's just fine if you're willing to believe impossible things. But you have to violate a half a dozen laws of nature, which isn't possible.
Right.
So here you go. I mean, it's
right.
A merry-go-round.
Right. Point number 11 calls for the DOD to release the complete inventory of plane wreckage and debris from flights 1177, 93, and 175, or any other aircraft that crashed or was destroyed on 9/11.
Yeah, and why don't we combine this with number 12 also, a complete inventory of the steel, the metal, and everything else, including photographs and videotapes. So there's tons of evidence, Jim, that nobody is being allowed to see.
Well, Lisa and Victor, you're both right on top of it. I mean, as Colonel George Nelson, Air Force retired, observed, I think even during the press conference in front of the courthouse in Alexandria, the NTSB is required by law to conduct a formal investigation whenever an airliner crashes, and it has not been done in any of these four cases, which is just one more indication that the government has been flouting the law, violating federal laws. The NTSB is being used to cover things up, not to get to the truth. It's the kind of behavior I saw in the death of Senator Paul Wellstone, and there are many other cases where the NTSB and other federal agencies are used to cover things up. If we could only get this information, there's no question but what would confirm and round out everything we have pieced together about what actually happened here on the basis of objective and scientific investigation.
Think about how overt that is. No accident reports filed for the crashes.
For the greatest terrorist attack ever against this nation.
And it's a matter of federal law. They're required to do this by federal law.
It's
so
just unbelievable.
Somebody ought to be, you know, in the courthouse answering for the failure to adhere to satisfy federal laws involving the, you know, these airliner crashes that brought about the death of large numbers of persons. I mean, it's outrageous on its face. Blatant. You're absolutely right, Lisa. This is so blatant.
Yeah. Well, Jim, you did a great job giving us an overview of this petition. So tell everybody now, if they haven't taken the opportunity, how do they find the petition? How do they find the scholars' website? And after they do sign it, after we reach the goal of 10,000, then what happens?
Well, we're, as you have observed, well on our way. I encourage everyone to go to scholarsfor911truth.org or simply st911.org. The petition is in the upper left-hand corner. Anyone who's interested in the studies and analysis, documents and records that substantiate points I've been making here should also survey our website. They're going to find all the classic studies by Steve Jones and by Judy Wood and by Neela Sagadavan and by A.K. Dwadney and others that substantiate the points that I've been making here about the impossibility of the cell phone calls, that the pilots couldn't have flown these planes, that the buildings were brought down by controlled demolition, that the pancake theory is preposterous. I just encourage everyone who cares about the United States and who cares about truth and justice to support us in our efforts to reveal the false and expose the truth about what actually happened on 9/11. The American people are entitled to know the truth about their own country.
That's
and
right.
when we reach 10,000, then what?
And when we reach 10,000, this petition is going to be sent to every member of the House of Representatives and every member of the United States Senate in order to bring pressure upon them and to display the keen interest of the American people in getting to the truth about 9/11. I think it's impossible to merely read through this petition and not understand that something grotesquely wrong is going on here, that the American government is attempting to manipulate the American people by controlling its access to information about this crucial event, which it is then capitalized upon for its own malevolent political purposes. So that if all of the research that we have done is correct, then it's clear that the American government has been using violence and acts of violence to instill fear into the American people to manipulate us for its own political ends, which, of course, if you check it, is the definition of terrorism, which means that the case we have put together, as frightening as it is to contemplate, indicates that the American government has been practicing terrorism on the American people.
Once we hit that 10,000 mark, I think there should be a concerted push to send it to the mainstream media and to the White House.
Oh, absolutely. We'll do that, too.
Right.
Lisa, that's a great point. We'll have a press release, but we'll send this out far and wide so everyone understands what's going on here and the breadth and depth of interest of the American people and how crucial it is that we get to the bottom of 9/11.
Right.
Yeah. And, Jim, we just want to thank you for coming on today.
Very much.
We can remember when your site first appeared on the Internet, and there wasn't more than just a handful of articles, and this has really become now the clearinghouse for 9/11 articles, and it's grown, I don't know how many degrees in magnitude, but it's a very, very impressive site. It's scholarsfor911truth.org.
We just want to thank you for all that you've been doing. We know that you bring to this issue a passion that not too many people have, and we appreciate that you're continuing to shine such a light on it.
Yeah, it's really just been a breath of fresh air for this movement. And as we approach the 5th anniversary, this is what we need. We need more momentum to keep pushing forward. So,
well, I think we can all look forward to 2 to 4 June when there's going to be a conference in Chicago that's going to bring together a lot of representatives of the 9/11 Truth Movement. And I hope very much that you guys will be there and we'll get a chance to talk and discuss these things and move things forward.
Yeah, you know, we were just talking about that before the show, so we might just show up there. But, Jim, you keep up the good work. Thanks for coming on Wing TV today, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Well, thanks so much, Victor and Lisa. Keep up the great work.
Take care.
Jim. Take care.
And we'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. We're going to talk about taxes. This is going to be a call-in show, 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if you have your thoughts on this subject, give us a call then. Until tomorrow, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you then.